So you've written this book on the key years of high school to college and transition. And so maybe just an open-ended question, maybe what can you tell our dyslexic community that might help the parents and help the students, think about what they're doing, maybe preparing to go to college?
Sure. So one thing I would like to, as always, start with optimism and let people know that students with dyslexia are attending schools of all different types. And, there's definitely too much focus in our college bound, community as it's society as a whole on a particular set of colleges. But for those who are interested in knowing that, indeed, students with dyslexia are going to these schools. And in fact, I'm sure anybody in your community, Fernette, is aware of the Yale Dyslexia Center. And, to be clear, that dyslexia center isn't there to serve students at Yale particularly. I think they do provide some services, but it's certainly a recognition that students are everywhere. And but at the same time, they're going to art schools and they're going to engineering schools. I interviewed for the book a young man who was at Cornell in an engineering program. And so that's the really good news. The field is wide open. So as far as thinking about colleges, I think that as always, it should start with the things that students want out of a college. And then from there, they can do some research to see what accommodations are commonly granted at some of those schools, and also what might be additional support. So for instance, when I wrote my book, I spoke to Will Marsh, who you may know, who won an award from IDEA a couple of years ago. He's feel old thinking about how old he is now. But I think it was he who attended St. Joseph's University, and I can't remember now that I'm telling you the story, but it was somebody I spoke to. Read and Write Gold was installed on the whole university system. And so what's great about that is students didn't have to be registered with the Disability Services Office in order to get access
What a great
to that
idea.
service.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
and so as I do things for my own work when I travel, when we go back to traveling again to a new state and I am looking up their state university's Disability Services Office, I'm seeing that not commonly, but certainly more than I used to a few years ago.
Yeah.
So you can do some research. What they should know is that basic minimum accommodations, as I'm sure you have discussed with them, are available anywhere for free. There are things that are not considered a basic accommodation that colleges can charge for, such as meetings a few times a week with a learning disability specialist or a coach, things like that. But what's also important is to, know the differences in what colleges deem as essential and well, what's considered a reasonable accommodation or not, and the reason some things might not be available. So I don't know, Fernette, whether you've had a lot of discussion in your community about, for instance, foreign language substitutions.
I would love to hear more about that. Yeah, I've certainly heard pretty much everything. Sometimes when we had our clinic, we would write letters and, it'd be prevent individually. And so sometimes an accommodation might be obtained for a particular student, but even if you're at the school, you can't assume that that would necessarily apply to you. So what's your experience with all this?
You just summarized it so perfectly. So it's very much an individual decision. And of course, it can depend too upon what major a student chooses. So, for instance, if you come to Hamlet University, if you're in my engineering department, you probably don't have to complete, well, I'm sorry, if you're in my engineering school, if I have a separate school at my university, that one probably doesn't have a foreign language requirement. And even if it's just part of the regular undergrad, perhaps there would be some flexibility. But if you wanted to be an international business major, they might have, as part of that requirement, a couple of years of foreign language. And so you know, it comes down to whether it's considered a fundamental alteration of the school's requirements. And as you said so perfectly, just because you, your neighbor down the street went to such and such university and got a substitution, that doesn't mean the next student who asks for it will get it. All the decisions are made on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, so a little risky, I'm sure it makes a lot of students nervous. We definitely had seen some students that was the one, like often it's not the first year of foreign language, it's the second year that seems to be a killer. And sometimes it might be the thing that seems to prevent them from graduation, either at, you know, either at the high school level, if it's part of the requirement, or even in college, I think, you know, in, I think maybe it was in our premium magazine, we discussed, it was a Harvard research study looking at people at Harvard who dropped out of college, and they found an overwhelming percentage were actually students with reading disabilities. It was the foreign language class that was contributing to their problems to, you know, they got all the way to Harvard and then they couldn't graduate. And it was that research study that made them change the policy.
Actually,
yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well,
but you know, sometimes
way to end up.
Yeah, it happens like that, you know. So it can be nerve-wracking, but you know, also people are people, and in certain situations, if push comes to shove and you say this is why, you know, I think I would say on that point that also some people are able to, you know, get accommodations where you can, for instance, pass on conversational language, but not necessarily unwritten, because that's part of the problem. If there's spelling problems and things like that, or problems with the conjugations, but the communication is actually quite good orally. Sometimes we've been able to get students who get this modification of the course, and it allows them to get their degree and kind of live happily ever after. So, you know, I think it doesn't really help too much to worry too much ahead of time about things like this. Also, I think there are a lot of students that mature, and so something that may not have been possible in high school, they get a little bit more auditory working memory, and you know, these things become possible. So, you know, I think, yeah, I think a lot of colleges do want their students to succeed, you know, so, you know,
so. I think, so what is important if you're talking about, and I think you summarized that I've never heard of that Harvard study, that's amazing. So what you do need to know as, you know, as parents of a student is that as you are looking at colleges with students based on all the stuff that we're talking about, you know, what size school do they want? What do they want to major in? Do they want to go, are they, you know, as I thought I was going to do growing up, you know, get out of a place where it snows in the winter and go someplace warm and lovely, which is not what I did. I went someplace colder. So there you go. But after you get all through that, as I said, you can use the internet to start looking at basic accommodations. But one of the things to do, and I recommend this for any student going to college at all, look at the graduation requirements. As you said, you know, sometimes it's 2 years in the same language, but also it's possible that a school you're going to will not require you to take that. So if college A requires 2 years of foreign language and college B doesn't, and you like them equally, then that's something you can use to help you make the decision when you get your acceptances. You know, and also I think one of the things to make sure families know, and I'm sure you've said this extensively in your work, but it's always worth repeating for people who haven't heard it yet, your IEP and your 504 are not valid after high school. So colleges are not bound by anything that's written in those. And what that includes, and this is where it's really important, is the foreign language or in some cases math waiver you got in high school. So, you know, it starts with the admissions process. So if Hamlet University requires you to have taken 4 years of foreign language just to be admitted, they don't have to make any modifications to that. If you don't have it, it would not be considered discriminatory to not admit you, because there'd be other students who didn't have it for different reasons. It's not considered sort of a disability-related denial, let's just say. So that's the first thing. So when students are going into high school from middle school, I think it's important to have discussions at that point at the eighth grade meeting about, you know, if you're discussing a foreign language substitution for a student or a waiver at the high school level, I think it's important to talk to the student about what those long-term implications could be, because it may narrow their choices. Yeah. What are you going to say?
You know, I'm started to see, and I don't, you know, it's one of those things, I don't know what the policy would be at so many different schools. I'm starting to see more people get options like to substitute American Sign Language, mm-hmm. or occasionally computer language if they mm-hmm. actually mm-hmm. do some programming, because dyslexics can excel at computer languages when you get that constant feedback on mm-hmm. errors and color coding and things like that. So I'm starting to see that more often where wow. students appeal to that. And that is a great right. thing, you know? Again, it's hard to know if it's the school of your dreams, if they're going right. to accept that or not. But that's becoming a more common way to approach the issue.
Right. And so there's no data available on who got into what college and what classes were or were not on their transcript. So we're never really going to know that answer. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting is I agree with you that I certainly, among my colleagues who have nothing to do with admissions, who are working in college disability services offices, American Sign Language, when a college offers it, is considered, or, you know, that's what they will substitute once the students get to college, is ASL if they offer it, or computer languages if they offer those, or however they do that. But what's also important to know is that it doesn't necessarily mean that they will, you know, utilize that from the high school to let students in. So again, you know, there's no numbers on that. But it is important to not make that decision. Oh, this is what I was going to say. At times in 20 years, when I have spoken to students, they have told me that they did not have foreign language when they were in high school. And so obviously this means that I think every place I've worked, in theory, that was on their graduation requirement. So that's anecdotal. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that that would be true for the next student. I don't know whether, you know, if they had something else on their transcript that got them in. But let me see if I can try to circle back to this point. But I think what's really important is students really need to have a voice in making that decision. What I have seen is, you know, parents have talked to me and said, well, my student didn't take foreign language, but even at the high school level, they didn't seem to take a substitution course like you've just described to me. It was just sort of, I don't know what they took instead, but the parents have not said to me, oh, instead of that, he took this.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about. And that's something you can start to look at. And parents and students can call these admissions offices and say, do you accept this as a substitute for that requirement? And I would think that, you know, it may be that admissions people, because I don't know, you would say to them, oh, it depends. Like if you were a great tuba player and we needed a tuba player for our marching band, maybe it wouldn't matter, or it doesn't matter at all. Yeah, we would take that for anybody.
Yeah, and a lot of times they just don't give you a solid answer. That's what makes it difficult. But ultimately, yeah. when the day is done, you know, do they really want you? Do you really want them? You know, yeah. you're trying to. It's like dating, yeah. you know, and so at some level, if they don't like what you are, then it's probably going to be a lousy environment for you. So, I mean, I think that's, I mean, I think that the case, it can be very tough to nail down. They often list preferred requirements, preferred qualifications. But what is true right. is that if parents have no clue that this is even on the map, no one's right. been warning them, be careful, yes. you might need 2 years, you know, then it can right. be like you're being bushwhacked. You know, you could be going to your IEP meetings and everything like that. And yeah. it was like almost assumed that you could right. go to college. And then suddenly you're shocked. And then you find out, well, I haven't been laying this foundation. You know, it's been hard enough getting through. And now he's not prepared, she's not prepared. So that can be, that's why I love the fact that you're talking about these kinds of requirements, because a lot of people just have no idea that that might be the thing, even before grades, even before tests, yeah. you know, what's kind of yeah. happening. Yeah, no, it's going to be a rude shock.
So what's really interesting too, because when I was doing a talk in Florida a couple of years ago, and I was looking at their state university, they didn't, they had it as a requirement for entrance. And if you, but then, and again, I apologize if I'm getting not all of these details right. What I recall is you could possibly be accepted without it, but you needed to then take the 2 years in order to graduate. Mm-hmm. And that is even trickier, in my opinion, because, you know, in high school, generally, if you have foreign language, you take it every single day. You're getting that reinforcement, right? And a lot of colleges do have their foreign language classes, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. So it's more repetition than you might get in a different kind of, you know, lecture, a discussion class. Like I was an English major where we discussed Shakespeare for 3 hours with a 15-minute break. But college classes, again, there's no data, but my impression from having been in them and also talking to students is they're much more accelerated. That the pace of those classes is faster than in a high school. And so that could be another good reason if a student will not be completely torpedoed, like everything else will fall apart if they take foreign language in high school, if they can handle it and it's not going to be, you know, disastrous, it might be a form of insurance, if you will, toward the admissions process, just because they'll have it on their transcript. And then if they go to a place that says, oh, we'll let you in without it, but then you needed to graduate. When I spoke to somebody at that university in Florida, they said, oh, yes, we do offer substitution. So even if you got in without it, there was a possibility you could get a substitution in order to graduate. But it feels like, as you say, you know, certainly we don't at the Disability Services Office tell students before they get admitted and enrolled what that they can have that substitution. So yeah, you're kind of rolling the dice, as you said.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, in cases where students are, this is probably my nerdy pre-med self, you know, trying to get our kids through. But if they find themselves stuck, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, in some cases you can try to delay your start. Take community college classes, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. might be easier if mm-hmm. you do okay with online, you know, foreign languages, because sometimes that means like an online learning lab. So you can right. actually just drive the, you know, do all the listening, you know, mm-hmm. and some people do better in classrooms, but now you've got everyone in masks. It's going to be right. harder to see people's pronunciation. You're going to yeah. mishear sounds. I mean, it can be, sure. you know, good for some kids and not good for yeah. other kids. And if it right. if it really is the gatekeeper, take rate my professor, right. see who's the easy teacher, and just get some way to get your credits. Because usually, if you can get your community college foreign language, mostly they will get accepted by four-year mm-hmm. colleges. And so. Mm-hmm. Either that or if you've got a school that would allow you to CLEP out, mm-hmm. you can take a CLEP exam. It'll give mm-hmm. you credit at community college, and your community college will let you get that credit for four-year college. You know, it slows down your education, but it doesn't keep you from a diploma. So, right. you know, there are ways to kind of like get around.
One thing I also want to say is if you enter a college, however you got there, let me try that again. It's been the end of a long day. Students who enter a college that has a requirement should request that substitution immediately. As soon as they are, you know, first semester, freshman year, register with our office and make your request. So I was just doing some research yesterday trying to help somebody, and I came across a letter from the Office for Civil Rights in response to a complaint by a student who had not been given a substitution. And I apologize right now, I can't remember if it was for math, I think it was foreign language. And what they found was that the school did not find the student eligible. So OCR sided with the college in that situation. Yeah. But one of the things they did not, I think, like was that they made the student take it and then kind of wanted to see how he did first. So I have anecdotally heard stories from families about that where they won't even consider a substitution until you take it. Hmm. So that's something to be aware of. Yeah. But also I can tell you anecdotally, in one of my previous jobs, it was not a very common thing, but there were a few students who literally waited until somewhere in the middle of the first semester of their senior year to register with our office. And, you know, part of what I kind of like about that story is over 20 years of working in colleges, I've met so many resourceful, bright students who have, you know, selected their courses, as you say, used, you know, Rate My Professor or course descriptions to find classes where they got evaluated, writing papers instead of taking exams or vice versa, according to what with their strengths. And then this was the time at which they, you know, so they never requested accommodations from us, but this was the thing they couldn't get, you know, passed without asking. And, you know, if you wait till, I don't know, after Thanksgiving, your senior year of college, by the time we have reviewed your request and, you know, at every place I've worked, and I don't know how it works everywhere, disability services at the three places I've been makes a recommendation, but we don't get to decide because we don't make those academic decisions. It gets, I guess, you know, sent up the ladder somewhere to the dean or whoever makes the final decision about whether students can have a substitution. But let's say Hamlet University has two designated classes for students who get substitutions, and one of them's not offered till next fall. Well, we're not going to offer it in the spring because you waited till the end of your college education to ask for your substitution. So you may get to walk in the ceremony in the spring, but you have to come back and finish your degree next spring by taking that one class.
Yeah.
So it's really important that they don't wait. They get started as soon as possible. Again, you know, I don't know whether it's really true that these schools are still making students try the class and, you know, go for tutoring and do some other things in order to prove it's too hard for them. But it's, you know, thousands of schools out there that's a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what about the situation where a student comes through? I mean, I got to say, I totally agree with you with the accommodations. You know, a lot of students will explain, I don't know if I'll need it. And sometimes I don't need it. But then they're like deep and, you know, like up to the waist in goo. And then they say, I need it. You know, it's too late. Better to like just file it at the, you've got a new teacher, say, I'm not sure that I will need it. You know, need these accommodations for your class because I haven't started the class yet, but these are issues that may come up with the subject, and then later they'll see whether you need them or not. But it's much worse if you're in the middle of a midterm exam and suddenly you're drowning. You know, so I totally agree with it there. Now, I do have a question about accommodations. It's pretty common, you know, a student. They might have kind of a cozy high school experience. They know their teacher, so they've known the resource person for a couple of years. They've had supports at home. And then suddenly they go out there, maybe another part of the country, and they won't accept, or they seem like they accept their accommodations. And they say, we'll do this, which isn't exactly what they asked for. And we won't do all of this. You know, do you have any advice when there are accommodations like that, that it looks like they're not taking the whole thing?
Well, so, you know, again, everything is an individual decision about whether that school's office, you know, first believes the student is eligible, you know, and that's the first thing. And I don't think that's an issue for a lot of students, but also whether they, you know, the documentation that they have provided supports the need for the requested accommodation. And so I think that if students feel strongly, they should, before things even get started, you know, contact their disability liaison where I've worked, they're called coordinators, and say, you know, gee, you didn't approve me for this. Could we have a discussion about why I really think I need it? Now, the answer may not be different. And students, so I would always suggest, unless students are extremely uncomfortable, they've had a bad intake with the coordinator and they, you know, they just feel like something's off, trying to do that first in that less formal way of, you know, setting up a phone call or a meeting. And then if that fails, every disability office is supposed to have its own grievance policy. So they can certainly file a grievance and see where that goes. So, you know, sometimes the reason, as you know, is that that students don't get a requested accommodation is because the school does not consider it reasonable. And that's not always the case. And to give you an example, things like, and you use the word, and actually you used it appropriately, but it's very unusual. I have not heard of myself, of students being able, for instance, to take, or maybe I misunderstood, like a conversation only foreign language class is actually, it's not really even a modification. That's the way they intended to teach that class. But if you wanted to take the Spanish class and not be evaluated on your written language and only be evaluated on how you speak Spanish, that would be a modification. And the reason I'm specific about that word is modifications are things we don't generally do. And there was a huge study done over 10 years on about 12,000 students who had been somewhere between grade 7 and 12 at the time of the start of the study, and they collected all this data. And of those who did go on to college, I think it was fewer than 3% received modifications at colleges. And so modifications would include things like writing a shorter paper, or being able to orally provide answers instead of writing down their test answers. Those are considered modifications because they change the expectations for the way students are evaluated. And that's not something we generally get to require professors to do. So, I think, look, do you have any specific examples that come to
mind? Well, like, you know, it's pretty common in the UK, and actually we have a significant segment from the UK. If you write at the top of your book, "I am dyslexic," you know, and "I have accommodations on file in the office," then they won't mark down on spelling. You
so
know?
What I don't understand is, why wouldn't they give the students the option to use a laptop?
I mean, that could be an option. Well, if with spell check or without, I guess that's the question. That is a modification. I mean, that is a modification, essentially, if you're allowed to use that, the spell check and the book. Sometimes I have to say there are, because the other thing that I don't know, you know, if people are kind of new to this world, is that the situation, I would say the overwhelming majority, and that's what we try to tell students and parents, is that the disability office or the student success office or the Office of Accessible Education, they're on the student's side. They're advocates. They're not to be feared. I mean, overwhelmingly, that's a positive thing. And often they're trying to be advocates and express things to the teacher who may or may not have training in the different needs of students. And I would say more often than not, the office counselor is talking to the teacher if not all the accommodations are granted. I'd like to say that first, because sometimes students are just, you know, it's this college is a monolith kind of thing, and they're a little bit worried. Whereas a lot of the best offices, the support offices, they have it's a lot of neurodiversity within the office, right? And the peer counselors and actually it's a home base for a lot of students once they actually get the hang of things. So a lot of students really like the personnel there, as opposed to like the great beyond out on the campus. If they have a large campus, you know, it can be a real psych out, you know, having to go to office hours, ask for accommodations. But if you've already talked to a counselor about it, they've already looked at your materials, you know, you feel like you've got somebody who kind of knows the score a little bit, then you can go in, and if you have any questions, you can refer them to your support person.
First of all, I love what you say. I love hearing that people really find a nice home at their disability services office. I would like to circle back to the idea of this. And so I can't speak at all to the UK because they have different laws than we do, but just thinking about the US. So it is a very typical accommodation, and we don't consider it a modification to allow a student a laptop with a spell checker. Now, for those who have not been aware that this is true, it would be a laptop provided by the office, because of course we need to make sure you haven't preloaded all of your answers on it. I mean, this is just sort of a general thing, and it's not connected to the internet. So you can look up your answers. And again, we're not assuming students are cheating. This is just the way things are done. But the only place that the spell checker perhaps might not be allowed is if, again, it was considered for that class a fundamental alteration of the objectives of that class for students to have to spell certain terminology right. So if you are in a kind of in a medical field of any sort, it might be really important as part of that class that you learn to spell the medications properly. However, if the student, you know, learns that the certification exam to be a something allows them to use a spell checker, and if they get denied, I think they could take the information back to the disability services office and say, well, the professor said that, you know, this would be a fundamental alteration, and I'm taking, you know, and this would be more not so much in a liberal traditional liberal arts curriculum, but let's say if you were getting certified to be you know, I don't know, something in the medical field that only required certification, you know, you take an exam and you get a certificate. I don't think EMTs, I don't know, maybe an EMT exam. If you could show that there was not, that even on the certification exam, you were allowed to have a spell checker, that would be a great argument to bring back to disability services. And then for the disability services office to talk to the professor, because one of the things I do want people to know is, let's say disability services office approves you for a certain accommodation. You take the letter to the professor at the start of the term, and the professor says, oh, Elizabeth, you can't have that accommodation in my class. I don't think the student should have to talk to the professor about it. So the best way to find out what to do would be when you have your meeting where you're alerted by the disability services that you've been reviewed, here are your accommodations, would be to ask your coordinator, what do I do if the professor says I can't have this? So back to your point, Renette, like, you don't want to have that conversation as you're walking in the door for your midterm.
Yes.
You want to have had it sooner. At that point, my assumption would be they tell you, if that happens, come back and let us know. And then that office, students are not supposed to be in a position to negotiate their accommodations with their professor. If we've approved it and the professor has a legitimate reason why, there should be a process that goes on. And I've never been a part of this. When I wrote my book, I interviewed a bunch of disability services directors, and on my blog people can find for free what they said about how those kinds of issues were handled when a professor said no to something. But there has to be a review, and what this OCR letter that I was reading yesterday said was you need to have a meeting. And I don't think OCR necessarily says it has to have this dean and that dean and this director, mm-hmm. but show them that you have a process with the right stakeholders involved. And in the case of a parent I was speaking to a couple of months ago, that actually, for that same reason I was just talking about, the student was in like a certificate program. They found out that on the certification exam, spell checkers were allowed, and they changed the policy. And the student was allowed to use a spell checker for that class.
Yeah,
great. So, you know, but there has to be a review, and there will be times that the professor's answer is going to stand because everybody's, you know, the right people have reviewed it and said, oh, yes, it's a fundamental alteration. Back to my international business major example. International business majors, yeah, you probably have to speak another language. But in other cases, it may not. And so it's always worth asking. I'd like to jump on something else that you said, too, about the importance of registering when you start with us. So, I'm sorry, registering with us when you start college. I always wonder, and it's just my little pet theory, if sometimes students don't register because the one really conscious experience they've had of extended time in particular is they took the SATs and they're locked in that room for 4 hours. And even if they don't need 4 hours to take that exam, they are stuck there. They can't leave the room. They can't read a book. They can't doodle. They just have to stare at their cubicles until everybody's done. That's not how we do it in college. So they should know, if they get extended time, once they're done with their exam, and again, I can't speak to everybody, generally they can leave. So they don't have to worry that if they accept that and ask for and accept that extended time, that they will be required to use it. And also, if they're in a class where things are really easy for them and they find they don't need their extended time for that class, they do need it in another class, we're not going to take away the accommodation because they didn't use it in every class. They are adults, and we trust them to know where to use it or not. But what's a really important point is, I would love to have a study done on how many what percentage of disability services registrations occur at schools after the midterms are done?
Yeah, true. Oh, it's true. Painful. Right? Yeah. So no, it's.
Understand. Students sometimes come out of a really supportive high school experience, and I have over 20 years spoken to students who didn't understand that some of the things that were happening for them were accommodations they needed to ask for. And so for all those reasons, plus some of them, hopefully not that many, but that research study was showing said some of it was stigma, some of them didn't believe they had a learning disability, all of those things factor into why students don't register. Sometimes they just say they don't have enough time. But if they register with us after their exams, the accommodation clock starts there. So you don't get to retake your midterms for a better grade. You don't get to have that grade expunged because you didn't have your accommodation. So I like to pitch it as a free insurance policy. So if you register with us and you get approved, it's there if you need it and not if you don't.
Yeah, no, I love that. Great advice. Yeah, if they end up, usually it's too late to withdraw by the time it's after the midterm, and then they've got to dig themselves out of a hole the rest of the time, and then there's just no energy and resources to be able to do it. So yeah, that first thing. In fact, general, if they're going to be traveling away, and now they've got kind of disruptions in routines because of the pandemic. We suggest going there early if you can, getting a feeling for where things are. Sometimes the office will be open before school starts and, can even drop in, get a feeling for what things look like, where you go for help and things like that. Because boy, it's just a lot of things at once, and then suddenly you've got things like people wanting to get together and whatever. And then you find out you don't have enough time and then you can't find the answer. So, great advice.
But first of all, I should take you on tour with me because, yes, absolutely. I encourage students to register as soon as they send the deposit. Once they send the deposit and they enroll with us, that's a great time to register. And what's really good about it is if you do it in May and June, then you are ahead of the curve. So when I am up to my eyeballs in reviews to do in August, those students are, they hit the ground running when they come in. Everything's in place for them because they've registered. Other students, it can take at schools anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks for the disability services office to finish this whole process of going through your report and getting back to you. And so you need to know what also happens. That would be an interesting study. How many students show up to our office the week before midterm start?
Totally.
And I don't say that to make fun of them. Everybody has their different ways of getting to places and thinking about things. So I'm not trying to mock them at all. I just think, one of the things, because the parents get exasperated, of course, because I told her to register when she started. I'm like, it's part of the process. We don't have to rush the process of reviewing your requests because you showed up the week before the midterms. So they should know you don't get, what is the signs people have in their office that say your lack of planning is not my emergency or something like that. So it can still take us as long as we normally take to get it, which may mean that you don't get accommodated for the exams that are coming up.
Yeah, that's the big warning. Yeah. Yeah. And, in a situation also where often schools vary a great deal in terms of how they provide audiobooks or knowing in advance that you'll have everything that you need, you need as much advanced time as possible because there are some things where they're still scanning in books and whatnot, and you can't just pop in there. In fact, it if you don't get in there early, like I said, come a couple weeks early or something like that and get to know the city and also try to find your book list for classes that you know that you'll have to take. A lot of cases, you might have to go through the first weeks without any of the audio support. There are schools that actually have everything off the bat or they can actually access all the resources. But more often than not, it won't be there for everything. And then you're going to play catch up trying to figure out like what really is going on and things like that. And there, even with the great resources like Learning Ally or Bookshare, sometimes there are like edition differences and page number differences. And these things all just take time because it can disorient you. I mean, it's hard enough going to college and then to have all these kind of things where you don't have the accommodations set in place because suddenly you're realizing you can't keep up, you know, when you're doing it the old fashioned way, then, you know, the time is on your side. Do it early. Totally agree.
Absolutely.
Neat. This has been a great conversation. Is there anything last little bit that you'd like to tell anybody that I haven't asked you about?
Well, I think, you know, again, you can do a lot of this research online. You can, I've been demonstrating in my Facebook group. I think I have one of these videos up on my YouTube channel, how to explore a school's disability services site and start to look to see, do they list the accommodations that they commonly offer? And not everybody does, and that doesn't mean anything bad. It just means they haven't put it up online. It doesn't mean they don't give anything or they're really stingy. But you can also start to look at the documentation requirements, see what they require. For those who are hearing differently, colleges may accept an IEP or a 504 as standalone documentation, but also they don't have to and some don't. And so you need to know in advance what you need, what your student will need for the testing. You can also see what else is there. So I've seen some really interesting, pleasant surprises. There are colleges that are offering students coaching. It might not be through our office. You know, it might not be considered a disability accommodation, but the resources are there. So there's a lot of stuff that students can do to try to make sure that they find a place that's going to be a good fit for them in that respect. And then they should, you know, register with us. As soon as they get in and they've decided to come so that everything can be in place. And as you said, I love what you said about looking at us as a resource and, you know, trying to find a good place to be comfortable. And even if it's not our office, but the research in general shows that students who make connections on campus tend to do well and they tend to persist. So wherever you find your people, try to do that. So.
Great. All right. Well, thanks very much. Tell us a little bit about your book. You have a book about it's about transition.
Yeah. So thank you. It's called From High School to College, Steps to Success for Students with Disabilities. And it's broken into six steps. It starts with a discussion of the laws in place so that families and professionals can really understand what the shifts are, what they mean for students. And then there's a whole discussion of accommodations, of the skills that research shows students need to be successful, the personal qualities we can help them work on too, some stuff about admissions and what that process looks like, how they should do their search, and then a long discussion about accommodations.
Super. Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks very much. This has been very informative. I love it.